Hope you're holding on to your britches, because we're not. We're flying by the seat of our pants with this week's episode of Terror Incognito.
Listen to them, children of the night. What music they make.
Hey everybody, welcome to another episode of Terror Incognito. Like I said before the intro theme, flying by the seat of our pants with this one. This one's going to be the most organic episode we've recorded in a while.
It's going to be a little casual.
We didn't have much of a time to get a script together, so a lot of the stuff we're going to be doing this week is going to be ad-libbed. It's going to be... like I said, organic. I think that's the acceptable word to use.
Yeah.
On this, maybe. So we'll see how it goes. This week it's just me and Sam again. Like I said, Alex has a lot going on in her life, and we actually haven't had too much of a follow up from her, so I have no new news to report to y'all in terms of that, except she's obviously fine and hanging in there, so hopefully she'll be back next week,
and so she says,
and we'll
she's already said she'll be prepared for next week, she'll be ready to go, but I feel like everything just changes every day.
Yeah,
in this world we live in
this crazy corona catastrophe that we're in. So yeah, it's just me and Sam again this week. Sam, how you doing? How you holding up? How you feeling?
I'm feeling good. I'm holding up okay. I'm still working every day, and things are settling down finally after, you know, a month's worth of 50 and 60 hour weeks.
Any rumors of layoffs yet?
No, not with us.
Well, that's good. You know, you at least don't have to have that looming over your head right now.
Yeah, they've already kind of cut bait with contractors to save money, but. They're saying that all the full-time employees are, you know, in a good spot. But, like I mentioned, everything changing every day, they were very clear that it is something that is under constant evaluation.
Oh, for sure. I think that's probably the case for you know, anybody who's still employed right now. So
yeah. Good news is the wife's going back to work, albeit,
oh, really?
Like, severely reduced hours. They're doing, like... curbside pickup only.
Ah.
So she's gonna be working like 4 hours a day, like two or three days a week.
Okay. So what do people have to like schedule to like pick up their fishing rods or whatever?
I'm not entirely sure. She found out about this yesterday. And so Monday she's got a call with her boss to figure out kind of how it's all supposed to work.
Okay. Well, that's good, right?
So I'm gonna have to talk to you about your mask making abilities from when you dropped off the records for me to sign.
Oh, that was just a handkerchief that I tied around my face.
That's what I told her to do. I was just like, figure out, like, find some like bandanas or something and just use those.
Yeah, Kelly's sister is making me one for when I have to do when I have to be around like 200 plus people coming up here in 4 more days. Yeah, it's gonna be an interesting. At least I know I'm employed until at least that date because my name is on the schedule. We'll see whether or not I'm furloughed or continue to be employed after that. Because there's rumors going around that we're getting ready to start furloughing people. But
yeah.
And
then the only other piece of news that I have is a follow up to last week's gardening adventure.
Oh yeah, how'd it go?
Everything is still green. Nothing has died yet.
Hey, that's a first step.
Yeah, it's been one whole week and everything is still green, and I am, I think now that the cold nights are finally over, I'm finally going to actually put the tomatoes into a pot today.
Okay. There you go.
Right now they're just in, like, the little cup container thing they came in.
Yeah, it's actually, like, I think last time I checked, we're actually supposed to start getting into the, like, maybe at a... at the lowest, like 40s, starting like middle of next week. So, Yeah, I think you ought to be fine just kind of putting him outside from here on out.
So yeah, everything has survived so far, which is good. Everything's looking good.
Good.
I am officially a farmer.
That a boy. It's not that hard. It's really not that difficult at all. People, you know, with if people could be doing it since, like, you know, before we even knew how to, like, you know, do and harness and build the things that we know how to do today, I think anybody can do it. It's not that bad. Just throw a seed in the ground and call it a day.
How are you doing, man? How's all this stuff treating you? I know you've been setting up for everything to get back in motion at work.
Yeah, it's been interesting, right? So we're doing, as it seems to be the story of my life since I've joined where I work, we are entering another unprecedented moment.
Yeah.
Yeah, there's a lot going on behind the scenes. There's a lot that's kind of taking place that, you know, it's just, it's an awkward time. It's a stressful time, but it's one that I will be glad to be over and done with by Thursday now. So it looks like Wednesday and Thursday are going to be the 2 days for this, because some other things have been going on and whatnot. So yeah, Wednesday and Thursday, and then hopefully we'll be all wrapped up and ready to go and move on, and everybody can continue focusing all their hatred on the Virginia State Governor like they are right now.
Perfect. Yeah, I've seen a lot of that floating around.
Yeah, I just don't understand. I don't understand how you can be mad at the man for signing in gun control bills that already passed. Like, there was a 10,000 person protest. I'm like, I'm pro gun and I'm not mad at him for this. Like, what the hell is the issue here?
I mean, He's still doing his job. I've still seen a lot of stuff floating around online just with the whole blackface thing, which I get. I don't, like, that's not something that should be forgotten. That is something that he did, but
yeah, I do not think he will get elected again as a result of it, but crazier things
happen.
That's
also like, that's also wildly unrelated to everything else going on right now.
Yeah. I'm in agreement with you there. And if we're going to let, you know, a man's political career speak for itself, I think his does. Anyways, yeah, there's just like a lot of misdirected anger because people are home and have nothing else to do except be angry at things, you know?
Yeah. I mean, I get it. I'm more fortunate than a lot of people, yourself, like, as are you.
Yeah.
Because we still have jobs and we can do them from home.
Yep.
And there are millions and millions of people that can't. And if I didn't have a job, if it was just me sitting at home, I'd lose my fucking mind.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
I completely understand people's, like, frustration and anger and everything to everything going on right now.
Yeah.
The reason I'm not in politics of any kind is because I've got no answers for any of those people.
Hey, at least you're honest, right? Yeah. I don't think even politicians have answers for any of these people. You know, it's interesting. Andrew Yang recently made some sort of statement saying that when people come back after assuming that the world does go back to some semblance of normality after this is all said and done, a lot of those jobs aren't going to exist anymore.
Yeah, I was reading a bit about that and how this is going to change the economic structures and social structures for reasons like this being, you know, automation is going to get a big bump because, you know, viruses aren't, well, non-computer viruses won't shut down automation.
Right. Right. Even those, for as simple as these machines are, you have to write them on a very low-level language. Yeah. And it's not something that a lot of people know how to do anymore. There are lots of programmers out there in the world, but finding low level programmers these days is that's like finding a good movie in the Star Wars series after the first trilogy.
You're gonna be digging for a while for that.
Yeah. They exist. Well, it exists. It just takes a little while to get in there. I think there's going to be a lot of people that are going to be shocked to find that they may not come back to what they expect, but we're not here to dump you in the doldrums. We're here to bring you out of them, because that's what we do for an hour and a half to 2 hours every week during Corona times.
Even non-Corona times. Even if you're having a bad week during non-Corona times, we're here for you.
Yes, it's true. It's true. And in fact, we'd like to kind of bring in some things that we thought were interesting this week with some horror headlines. You ready to do them, Sam?
Let's jump in.
Let's do it.
Headlines.
All right. Kicking things off with something actually pretty awesome. David Bruckner is possibly doing a Hellraiser remake, although this has been confirmed by Hollywood Reporter and Bloody Disgusting. David Bruckner, who directed Nighthouse and The Ritual, as well as pieces of VHS and Southbound, it looks like he's going to be helming the feature, with the screenplay being done by Ben Collins and Luke Piotrowski. Collins and Piotrowski were also they were responsible for writing parts of VHS, the 2 and Siren, as well as Super Dark Times, which is something that I admittedly have not seen. So I don't know. It's an interesting combination. It's the last person that I would have expected to direct a new Hellraiser movie. How do you feel about a new Hellraiser movie coming through the pipeline without, I guess, Clive Barker being attached or even being remotely involved in the writing so far? I mean, like, I know we've had plenty of spinoffs, like a lot of sequels Clive Barker hasn't had anything to do with, but you'd think with a reboot, a genuine reboot, that's probably going to get a lot of I don't think it'll get a massive budget, but it'll definitely get a lot of press. It'll definitely get a lot of marketing. I just don't understand. So I know they're going to put his name on there, obviously, right? Like, it's a story, you know, inspired by Clive Barker's you know, novella or whatever. But how do you feel about Clive Barker not really having anything to do with this?
I don't know. I think it's one of those things that it might still be early enough that he might. I mean, there's plenty of stuff to change, and it's all speculative right now. And really, the only thing that we know is David Bruckner's attached.
Right. Right.
I think it's honestly, I'm more interested in the fact that all of these reboots and remakes that are happening are being done by people that had their hands in VHS.
Yeah.
It's... So, like, Radio Silence was part of it, and they're handling Scream, which is also owned by Spyglass.
Yep.
So I think Spyglass just has, like, a new pipeline of
young talent,
people that they're going to tap for whatever they want.
Yeah, it's been interesting kind of watching, like, this new army of directors come into the fold and kind of take over horror remakes. Like you said, some more well received than others. But I mean, I think that's kind of the case with any remake, right? Like, every once in a while you get one that's genuinely good, but
yeah,
the rest of them kind of get pitched to the side. I will say I am interested in seeing where this goes. The last Hellraiser movie, I can't remember the name of it, that came out like 2 years ago, I think, at this point, wasn't bad.
Yeah.
Which is high praise considering some of the other one. Judgment, that's what it was. Hellraiser.
Yeah,
Judgment.
And I mean, when you get this far into most franchises, sometimes that is the highest praise you can give movies later on in the installments. It's just like, it's not bad.
Yeah. Yeah, it played out more like a detective film than it did a Hellraiser film, but it got real gruesome. And it actually sort of took the same route that the Saw reboot is taking right now, kind of detectives tracking a serial killer leads them into this, you know, dark avenue of the supernatural. It'll be interesting to see whether or not they try to ground this reboot again, like they seem to be doing with Candyman and, you know, like I said, with Saw and like some other stuff. I wonder if this will be more grounded or outlandish. I'm leaning more towards the grounded, I think.
Yeah, I think if Radio Silence was doing this, it would be a little bit more on the outlandish side.
Mm-hmm.
And as far as Clive Barker is concerned with his involvement, like, if this movie does well and he's not attached to it in any way other than in name only because it's his concept,
mm-hmm.
I could easily see him coming back into the fold for another one. But I think there's so much content readily available that if you're going to reboot it and go in a more grounded direction like the franchises you've mentioned, you don't really need Clive Barker for that.
Yeah, I guess it's true. You got enough of his, I guess, his inspiration to kind of lead to it, right? I wonder if they're going to kind of go down the same avenue they went in, like, Hellraiser 3, where they're going to kind of have somebody who, you know, just wants to see the seediest sides of life, right? Mm-hmm. And then they open the box and they get their wish. I imagine that'll probably be kind of the same avenue, but given Bruckner's past films, The Ritual and Night House, both of them are pretty grounded movies up until the very end. Yeah. Or at least they seem. I have not seen Night House, but The Ritual definitely was pretty grounded up until the very end.
I mean, I think as long as they don't pull some Spawn-style bullshit where, like, everybody's watching the movie for one person and that person has no screen time.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. That begs the next question, though.
Who's going to play Pinhead?
Yeah, man.
Yeah. I'm still sticking with, and let me double check. This dude's old as fuck. I'm pretty sure he's still alive because I feel like I would have heard about it. Yeah, he's still alive. I'm still sticking with what I said the last time we talked about this, which feels like 8 years ago. Mm-hmm. Tobin Bell.
Mm-hmm.
If for no other reason than I think it would be hilarious to then see a Hellraiser Saw crossover with Tobin Bell in both movies, in both roles.
That would, I mean, continuing off what we discussed last week, that would definitely be be interesting. I'll tell you that much.
He's just playing a game with himself.
Yeah, yeah. I don't know, man. We'll see. Whoever takes the reins is definitely going to have a lot to live up to. I know that much. So we'll see how it all plays out. But we'll definitely be paying attention to this as more news comes down the pipeline. Next up, The Hunt. It's getting a actual digital release now, Blu-ray and DVD as well. As everybody knows, this film was delayed like crazy. It then hit VOD platforms as a rental for, like, you know, a movie pass. In fact, Amazon, I saw, was advertising these films as, like, movie night or something like that, movie pass or something like that with it. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, it was $19.99 for you to rent the film for 48 hours, I believe. People have been pretty mixed on this one, it seems. I haven't seen it yet. I really do want to, but I just can't wrap the $19.99 around my head when I can just pay and own that in, like, three more weeks.
And that's what I'm waiting for, honestly. Like, I don't mind paying $20 if I'm going to buy the movie.
Yeah, but yeah, yeah, yeah.
48 hours, like, maybe I just want to buy it, but I don't have time to watch it, or something comes up when I rent it.
Well, I don't think it activates. So the 48 hours, I think, starts as soon as you
start watching
it. Yeah. Okay. Otherwise, I think you have it for 30 days or something like that.
Gotcha.
I think it's the same as, like, VOD rentals, but I could be wrong on that.
Well, I assume that as it officially releases on digital to buy it, I'm assuming the rental price is going to drop to, like, the standard rate.
Yeah. Like, it'll still probably be like $9. Yeah, like $9-$10 or something like that just to rent it, but still it cuts it in half, right?
Yeah, and that's I'm much more willing to pay that.
Yeah, for sure. And, you know, I wouldn't be against the whole $19.99 thing if I had a whole, like, army of people in the house to watch it with me. Like, if you and Alex came over or something like that, we all watched it together, then yeah, it'd be worth paying the $19, right? Because then three of us are watching it. It's cheaper than going to the movies at that point. But, like, for me to just sit down and rent that, watch it once, seems a little high. But we've kind of hammered this point in multiple times throughout the podcast. Mm-hmm. The Craig Zobel directed film is like I said, it's getting mixed reviews. People seem to either really praise this movie or really dislike it. And I've seen some stuff basically saying that it like seems it tries too hard to have an edge and then doesn't have one, or it's got just enough bite to make it work.
I've heard that the as far as it like trying to have an edge and not having one, what I the biggest criticism I've heard, and again, I haven't seen this either, is that it tries to make a point, or it's trying to set up a point that it's that it wants to make, and then it just loses the tack like halfway through the movie.
Yeah, I've heard that too. But it's got Betty Gilpin in it, and everybody seems to be pretty universally praising her performance in this. So they calling
free
her
Betty.
The, yeah,
they're hashtag free Betty. It worked.
Calling her the highlight of the film. So it's coming out May 26th, 2020 on Blu-ray and DVD, and June 9th on Blu-ray and DVD, May 26th on digital from Universal Pictures. The Blu-ray is also going to have some behind-the-scenes featurettes, Crafting the Hunt, death scene breakdowns, this is actually pretty cool right here. So the death scene breakdowns is the Hunt's special effects and makeup teams are going to give you an inside look on how they carried out some of the death sequences in the film.
I feel like that speaks to you.
It does. It really does.
Base level.
So much so that I'm probably going to keep my eyes peeled for this to get it on physical release just yeah, because like of something like that. That's pretty cool.
Like stuff like that, I would like that would in. That would make me want to buy the Blu-ray just for stuff like that.
Yeah, exactly. I wish more films would do stuff like that, honestly, because I'm really always fascinated by the special effects in films. And then the last one is Athena versus Crystal Hunter or Hunted, and it's going behind the scenes to check out some of the choreography that and training that Betty Gilpin and Hilary Swank went through.
I feel like we need more stuff like this.
Yeah,
as we've talked about in the last month or so about stunt people, and we regularly talk about special effects artists. I would love to see more stuff like this.
For sure.
These are all the, with the exception of, a handful of, makeup artists or stunt actors and production artists or cinematographers, a lot of these people are, like, unknowable to the average person.
Yeah. Do kind of hope, though, going back to, like, the initial thing that we were talking about with the rentals, with the movie ticket rentals, whatever. I wonder if we're ever going to see any sort of numbers on that at all. It's just a weird experiment that I would have really liked to see how it played out.
I don't think the studios want to let out their box office numbers or their initial take numbers on release for stuff like this, because it's probably just a lot of red.
Yeah, maybe. I'm sure it is. I'm sure it is, because they're not making nearly as much. But I do know that they were the number one rentals for each week, like this and Invisible Man.
Yeah,
were the number one rentals when they did get released. So they had some sort of steam generated from this. It was just
One of the things I'm curious as part of the outcome of coronavirus this new format where studios are releasing direct to digital platforms is whether or not we're going to see a shift in all of these like high budget blockbusters.
Right.
And going not necessarily like low budget where we're talking like 5 or 10 million or less, but 25, $35 million budgets becoming a more normal thing for considerably mainstream videos.
Maybe. I don't know. It'll be interesting to kind of note those things, though, as things like, go on.
Could you imagine a $200 million movie slated to release, and then something like this happens, and that studio just goes belly up because there's no audience?
I don't know. This is a tough one. That's a tough ask. I don't think that we're ever going to be rid of the $200 million film, right? Just because those are, like, events. Those are...
Yeah.
And they're so far and few and far between these days. Most films are not like that, right? So we really rarely get those kinds of things. We, for instance, Avengers, right?
Mm-hmm.
That was what, like almost a billion?
Yeah.
Well, $500 million, I think, to create, and then like it earned over $1 billion.
Yeah.
You know, I don't think we're gonna get rid of those event style films, but yeah, I think I would be more apt to agree with you. Maybe this will cause studios to be, at least for the immediate future, reactive to this whole thing.
Mm-hmm.
I think there are still too many movies in the pipeline that are being designed as events. The biggest one that comes to mind right now is Dune.
Yeah.
I don't know how you can produce a film like that with that much marketing hype and that kind of a cast and not still make it a $250 million film.
Well, you can't. That's why the last, like, 17 versions were garbage. It's just, like, the money's not there to turn that story into a movie.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I mean, obviously, they're still doing it, right? They haven't slowed down. In fact, they just had an Entertainment Weekly article thing about it that came out. That's just keeping the hype train going.
Yeah.
So yeah, I mean, I don't think they're going to go away. I do think that we will start to see more of the norm become under $100 million. Mm-hmm. Just because of reactions to this. Studios are losing a lot of money. They're going to be scared. It's going to take a while for people to go back to the theaters because the economy still has to recover.
Yeah.
I think all those companies are going to take note of that. But I also don't think it's going to stop companies from being like, no, this is meant to be an event. And marketing it as such. I think we'll maybe just get like one a year.
I mean, one of the things that I do hope, though, is, you know, things go back to normal. People trust each other enough to start going back to movies. The economy allows people to go back to movie theaters and things like that. But what I hope is that studios, now that the cat's out of the bag, don't automatically stop putting movies on digital platforms at the same time as release.
Right.
Because I think given the option of going to a movie theater or paying a premium to watch at home, I think if that's my option, there are certain movies where I would pay the premium to watch it at home.
Mm-hmm. What would it take? Because two of the ones that we have been talking about the most through last year, neither of us went for. So what would it take to get you to pay the $19? John Wick 4.
Huh?
John Wick 4 for me would be a heartbeat. Day and date that's released, I'd pay the $19 to watch that. Matrix 4, yeah. That's another one.
Yeah, I mean, like, those... I think the biggest thing for me is... perfect example, I think, would actually be, like, smaller films that you potentially don't have the opportunity to see in a theater. Like, for example... Parasite wasn't playing nationwide.
Right.
We saw it at Criterion. Any of those smaller movies where you might not have an opportunity to see it in a theater, and then you'll have to wait 5 months, 4 months, however long, until, you know, what, Oscar season's over or it gets a wider release. Like, just throw it out on a digital platform at a premium price, and it's not gonna... I don't think that would impact your ticket sales from a box office perspective, because the people that want to see it in theaters are still going to see it in theaters. Like John Wick, for example, or, you know, Matrix 4. Those are the kinds of movies that you want to see in a theater.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you want that big screen, you want that super loud audio. But I think there's plenty of opportunities for smaller, more independent stuff to get your limited theatrical release and also not have to wait.
I don't think they can charge the $19. I think they have
for the smaller ones.
Yeah, I don't think they have the power to do that. Like,
yeah,
I think they have to charge a lower amount of money. They have to. Like, they just.
I mean, even if you charge $15, that's still more than you get from ticket sales.
Yeah, it is. But I think
minus
I
whatever
think
the cut is.
I think they need to match ticket sales in order to do it right. Like, I think $12 is not unreasonable.
Yeah.
I think it's perfectly fine.
I think there's a bunch of movies that, like, I'd want to see, but I don't know if I actually just want to be in large crowds to go see it.
That's true. In fact, some of the smaller films, like, especially horror films, I actually get more irritated when I see them with crowds because people are like, oh, you know, or, like laughing or screaming at jump scares or, like,
yeah,
you know, talking during things, like...
Although sometimes it does actually benefit. Like, when we saw The House that Jack Built and lost his shit in the middle of it when Matt Dillon just, like...
pops his face on screen uncomfortably for 20 seconds.
Yeah. Every once in a while it does add to the atmosphere. I'm not saying it's like, but for instance, when I went to go see the Warcraft movie, there was literally like a couple behind us who would not shut up because he was trying to explain the entire premise of the entire World of Warcraft universe to his girlfriend who was sitting right next to him the entire time. It took like three of us to tell him to shut up before he finally shut up. It's shit like that. It irks me. So I would be like, it's funny though. Cause like I'm the type of person that would be like, John Wick. Yeah. I'd rather just watch it at home. That's fine. I'm good with it. My sound system's fine. I got it. I enjoy those movies. I got a big screen TV. Let's go.
Yeah.
Those kinds of things I guess most of the time I don't see too much of a benefit with theaters. It's just the price, the asking price, the premium on doing it at home is just too much. So far right now. I think, like I said, this will be an experiment. We'll see. If they got it down to 15, I'd be much more likely to go for it.
Yeah.
Next up, The Lodge is coming to Blu-ray and DVD, as well as digital. And Hulu, apparently.
Super excited for that part.
Yeah. The Goodnight Mommy duo of Veronica Franz and Severin Fiala released this movie called The Lodge back in January, I believe, right?
Yeah.
Actually,
I think it might have been beginning of February.
Oh, was it? Okay. The movie got a lot of hype. It was quickly marketed as like one of these A24 light style films. And it features, it's about a family who retreat into their remote winter cabin over the holidays. When their father is forced to abruptly depart for work, he leaves his children, Aiden and Mia, in the care of his new girlfriend, Grace. Isolated and alone, a blizzard traps him inside the lodge's terrifying events summon specters from Grace's dark past. I've heard since this film came out, so when this film did get released, a lot of people were saying, oh, this movie is terrifying, blah, blah, blah. A lot of the marketing was like, oh, this movie is absolutely horrendous and scary, and you're looking at a new classic in the vein of Hereditary. Since that has happened, more of the audience response has been like, this movie isn't exactly horror, it's really good, but it's incredibly depressing.
Which is okay.
Yeah. I'm still very interested in watching it. I want to watch it.
I personally enjoy movies that kind of straddle that line of whether or not it would be considered horror or genre.
Mm-hmm.
Or if, like, it's how I felt about Parasite. I know we talked about it when we did our 2019 recap, where, like, that movie kind of walks that line of, is it a genre film? I couldn't quite put it over that line.
Mm-hmm.
But if I did, it would have been my number one horror movie of last year, or genre movie of last year.
Yeah, I think that one caught a lot of people off guard. Audience responses seemed to be pretty similar to that, because I think it was marketed pretty closely as a horror film, something that would appeal to horror audiences, and then when horror audiences went and watched it, they didn't get at all. They got something enjoyable. People really, really liked the film, but it was not what anybody expected. We had that same reaction when we walked out of the movie theater.
Yeah, and so, like, if The Lodge kind of does that same thing, like, I'm honestly totally okay with that, because I think it's a good way to kind of bridge the audiences and maybe get people who aren't fans of horror movies to maybe broaden their horizons a little bit.
Right.
But also give something a little bit more mainstream to horror fans.
Yeah. Yeah. So like I said, this is going to be hitting DVD, Blu-ray, and digital all on May 5th. It's also hitting Hulu literally the same day. There's no delay for that at all. How do we feel about this? I know you as a Hulu subscriber are probably all about this, right?
Well, me as the husband of a Hulu subscriber.
but as somebody who has Hulu, access to Hulu, you're probably over the moon about this.
We've been watching Hulu constantly lately, actually.
How do you feel about stuff like this in the future? Do you want to see more like stuff like this? Do we think that this was done because they probably thought they weren't going to get enough money from individual sales, so they just accepted the Hulu money? Do we think
that... Well, I'm curious, when it says it's also coming to digital... I mean, if it's coming to Hulu, I assume that it's gotta be, like, tied to HBO or something.
Are Hulu and HBO in bed like that?
I think so. Oh, okay. Because we've been going back and, like, watching shows like Veep and whatnot.
which were all on HBO, but we watch them through Hulu. So I think, like, the two of them are tied up, because I know, like,
Amazon... Well, you can do the same thing with Amazon.
Okay. Because I know Amazon's got it with Stars.
Yeah, I think Amazon's just got pretty much every channel, because you can even get Shudder on Amazon.
That's true.
You just can't get live stuff, but you can get all their whole library.
So I'm curious when it comes to digital. I mean, obviously, I assume that means, it, at the very least, in addition to Hulu, that means Amazon. Mm-hmm. Other streaming services like Netflix, I think, are going to be held out. So I think this is, like, creating the exclusive platform between Hulu and Netflix. I've never particularly liked the idea of, like, platform exclusives when it comes to, you know, videos or video games.
Yeah, it irks me a little bit when it's a video game thing, but it is what
I've never liked platform exclusives. I think it depends on where it ends up for digital.
I'm sure it'll be everywhere for digital.
And whether or not you need a subscription to one of those services like HBO or something to watch this on Hulu, or if it's just available on, like, regular Hulu.
You mean, like, the free versus, like, the premium one or whatever?
Well, no, like, if you need to have like HBO to watch this on Hulu, or if you can just go to Hulu and watch it.
I think the way it's being marketed, it seems like you're just, like, any Hulu subscriber will be able to view this film.
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't know. It's interesting. I feel like this is probably, we're going to probably see more stuff like this coming in the pipeline, because especially films that were released right at the beginning of the Corona stuff, like, they're probably just not going to make as much money, right? They're probably not going to get that return, so why not sign that guaranteed paycheck? Like, Netflix, Hulu, Amazon, all of them give you a lump sum up front, and then you get residuals after a certain amount of time, right? So
yeah.
I feel like we're going to start seeing more and more stuff like this, which is why I think we might have seen this come from The Lodge, because they're probably like, well, we're not going to get a whole lot back, probably on our own, so why not just take the guaranteed money? And I guarantee you Hulu forked over a little extra to get it on the same day.
Yeah. I mean, it absolutely makes sense for the studio from a financial perspective to recoup any potential losses from, you know, this movie came out February 7th.
Oh, okay. So it was February.
And a month later, everything stopped.
Yeah. Yeah. So, I mean, but, like, stuff was going on. People were already starting to kind of, like, not quarantine exactly, but get a little more wary of where they were going and how they were getting there. And I think films started to get hit a little before everything else did.
Yeah.
So yeah, I don't know. It makes sense that they're doing it with Hulu. I think it's a smart decision on them. I wish it was with Netflix or something that I could watch, because I'm not a Hulu subscriber. But that actually might change, because we just canceled AT&T. So
there you go.
We'll see. We'll see how it goes. Next up, we've got some couple bits of information about Creepshow, Shudder's TV show adaptation of Creepshow. At least, first things first, the first season of Shudder's Creepshow is coming to AMC proper in May. For those that don't know, Shudder is owned by AMC, so there is a bit of brotherhood going on between those two channels. For instance, Nosferatu started on AMC first and then became and then started airing on Shudder as well, and I think they're noticing a fair amount of crossover between the two, because people like me who don't regularly watch AMC, I watched all of Nosferatu once it appeared on Shudder. I think they're trying to see if they can maybe get a little bit more money for this show by putting it on AMC and releasing it to a wider audience, because there's while there is a significant amount of there are a significant amount of Shudder subscribers, I feel like, you know, the AMC audience will always be wider. And maybe with the fact that The Walking Dead can't be completed right now, Creepshow might tap into that same audience, some of that same audience at least.
I just like the idea of something other than The Walking Dead being on AMC.
Yeah, right. So Creepshow is actually coming right around the corner, May 4th. The six episodes will be available. Let's see. They're going to be airing back to back on Monday nights, basically May 4th, May 11th, May 18th. I don't know. It's interesting. I really enjoyed this entire series. Sam, did you watch it or no?
I have not watched it yet. It's pretty still good. In my backlog.
Yep, it's pretty good. I don't know. It'll be interesting to see how people who aren't Shudder subscribers respond to this. So yay, people who aren't Shudder subscribers that have AMC, this gives you an opportunity to check it out. Next up, the next bit of news comes directly from Greg Nicotero, and it's regarding season 2 of Creepshow. It will also be 6 episodes. I got to admit, I'm a little bit disappointed in that. I would have thought that the pilot season, you know, the initial launch season was going to be 6 episodes, and given its success, this was going to expand it into 10. But maybe that's what they just need to do. Maybe just keeping it short and sweet is the best way to handle these things. I don't know. We'll see how it all goes. There was a talk with Greg Nicotero, and he said that they read a lot of stuff for season 2 because, of course, they had an inordinate amount of submissions from everybody who had seen season 1 and was like, oh, my God, we love this. We want to be a part of this. I was hoping that for season 2 we would have gotten a bigger pickup, maybe 8 or 10 episodes, but, you know, Shudder is still new to the game in terms of the amount of money they can bring towards multiple shows, so I was hoping that we would have gotten more, but honestly, trying to fit Creepshow into the hiatus of The Walking Dead, 6 episodes just feels like it works before he has to go back to his other job. So maybe that's another factor for it, right? Like I said, AMC is backing this. Maybe they see this as an opportunity to close a gap for horror fans between, I guess, Walking Dead shows, right?
And the good thing is, because, I mean, the thing to remember is Shudder is a niche streaming service, so they don't have nearly the same kind of resources as everybody else.
And they're never going to.
But if you get it on AMC and it does get some traction with non-Shudder subscribers, you can potentially get some of that sweet, sweet Walking Dead money.
Yeah. I will say this. I hope that it does continue to remain a Shudder series first and foremost. Mm-hmm. Because I really do feel like this series is a love letter to horror fans. If it taps into the mainstream and becomes... This is the classic, oh, we liked it before you did.
The hipster horror fans?
While I don't have a problem with this hitting mainstream audiences, and I hope it is successful, I do hope that they keep the scope under Shudder and that it comes to us first. Like, in terms of releases, right? Like, if it becomes really successful on AMC and then all of a sudden AMC is like, hey, day and date, we're releasing this on AMC and on Shudder same time, I'll be a little irked, a little bit.
Yeah.
And I really don't know why or how to justify that aside from, like, pushing it mega asses.
Well, no,
like,
I think with a niche streaming service like Shudder, versus a more readily available thing like AMC, I think to do same day and date on both platforms actually hurts Shudder.
Yeah, I'm with you.
So I do agree with you on that. This is one of those instances, because Shudder's owned by AMC. Like, if it was something else, then I don't know if I would have the same argument. But because Shudder is owned by AMC, I think AMC would be doing a disservice to release same day.
I'm with you.
Because they're just taking away potential viewership and revenue from their own subsidiary, which I think is stupid.
Yeah, no, I agree with you. Next up, speaking of HBO, HBO Max, which is this... The concept of HBO Max is almost to me like the concept of CBS All Access.
Yeah.
Why it's necessary is beyond me. But they're going for it, so I don't really know what else to say. I still can't find any definite answer as to whether or not HBO subscribers are going to have access to HBO Max. I can't find a definite answer to that at all. If it's turning into a whole nother thing that you need to subscribe to...
I think it is.
I'm going to be a little upset with that.
Unless they're just rebranding HBO Go.
Which is possible.
Because if that's all it is, then you get it automatically as long as you have a subscription to HBO. But if you're making me pay for 2 separate HBO subscriptions, you can go fuck yourself.
Yeah, yeah. And the only reason that I'm saying this is because HBO Max seems to be getting in bed a lot with Bad Robot right now. The series that we're about to talk about is just one of the things that they're looking at picking up from Bad Robot. So there have been talks over the years about Overlook and The Shining and all the history that could possibly spin off of that film, right? There's a lot of untapped resources there. There's a lot of really fascinating stuff that takes place in the Overlook Hotel before Jack Torrance even shows up, before the sequel to the movie came out. There's a whole lot of history there, and I think it is fascinating. But it looks like there is actually going to be a series based on that history now called Overlook. Like I said, it's being produced by J.J. Abrams' Bad Robot. They're teaming with HBO and director Mark Romanek to bring this to the small screen. It looks like they're going to be doing a commitment to one-hour dramas. So it looks like it'll be hour-long episodes, horror thrillers. It's being described as a horror thriller that explores the untold stories of the Overlook Hotel. So we'll get to see what some of those specters, some of those creepy spirits that Jack sees living in the hotel with him. I guess we're going to explore some of their stories.
Yeah.
I wonder if we're going to get the bathtub lady in the first season, or if they're going to save that for later. Abrams is producing Overlook along with Ben Stevenson and Rachel Rutsch. Rich, that's a fucking name right there. Try saying that five times fast. I guess he's been already playing around. I actually didn't know this, but Abrams has been producing Castle Rock?
Yeah.
Already? Interesting. Mm-hmm. Interesting. So he's not a stranger to the universe, I guess. Definitely makes sense considering how well... Well, I guess Mike Flanagan's... It was critically received well, but it did not do very well in theaters. Mike Flanagan's sequel.
Yeah.
Dr. Sleep. Which, have you seen that yet, by the way?
No. It's another one another that one I have on not your
backlog?
Watched
yet. Man, your backlog is getting pretty big.
Dude,
man.
It's super long. It's so long.
That was a great one, man. I really enjoyed the hell of that movie.
A little note on HBO Max real quick.
Okay.
HBO Max, and this is according to CNET, which this article was written yesterday. What's today's date?
The 18th.
Yeah, so this article came out yesterday on CNET.
Okay.
HBO Max will cost $15 a month when it rolls out in the U.S. sometime in May, which compares with $7 a month for Disney Plus. And Peacock, NBC's streaming service, will offer a free limited tier with advertising. Some people who already have an HBO subscription will get Max included for free. Anybody who pays for HBO through AT&T, which is HBO's parent company, or DirecTV, or Charter and its Spectrum services, will get it for free.
Fuck. So everybody else is going to have to pay for a second fucking channel.
Yeah, which means I'd have to pay because we have Verizon. So, yeah, fuck this. Not going to watch it. But since you just cut AT&T, you're not going to get it either.
Yeah. Well, AT&T cut that from me. So we used to get HBO really? For free just being AT&T wireless subscribers. And then they took that away and replaced it with Spotify. But even that was a bunch of bullshit. We can't get access to Spotify either because they... So when we first jumped in, we were like the premium tier, right? Because we were paying unlimited or whatever, and that was the highest tier. But now they have a tier above that that you have to pay for in order to get this stuff. And it's not worth it.
Okay. So apparently within the first year, HBO Max will expand to include another tier that carries advertising. The price has not been specified, nor has the launch date or catalog limitations, but it will be either cheaper or free. And HBO Go is the streaming version of just your HBO subscription. HBO Now is the separate service, which also costs $15 a month, which will continue to operate and will eventually be replaced by HBO Max.
So HBO Now subscribers are going to get rolled into HBO Max?
Apparently.
But how's that going to work if they're keeping their content on separate? Dude, this whole thing.
They're going to merge HBO Now and HBO Max.
What AT&T is doing right now is just super confusing with the way that they're handling HBO. It does not make a lot of sense to me whatsoever.
I'm not going to pay $15 a month to watch.
Additionally, yeah, no, fuck that, dude.
Yeah, there's no way.
Fuck that. There's no...
Because I'm already paying $15 a month or $20 a month or whatever the hell it is just to get HBO in the first place.
Right, right. Yeah, it's dumb. Moving on to some video game news. It just wouldn't be another week without more Resident Evil news. there's a rumor going on that there is a remake of Resident Evil 4 incoming after the success of 3.
Success in quotation
marks. Well, I mean, it was successful. They sold 2 million copies in the first weekend.
That's true. They did sell a lot.
They sold a shitload.
A 7-hour game.
Yeah, I'm sorry. It wasn't sold. It was 2 million shipped in the first weekend. I'm sure it was a good portion of that was sales. So regardless of how I felt about the remake, which if you wanted to hear that, you can listen to last week's episode. The hype train is definitely continuing. I just don't know that 4 needs a remake yet.
Where do you think they stop?
In terms of remakes?
Mm-hmm.
Honestly, I would have thought they would have gone back and done a complete overhaul of 1. I mean, they did that once, but it was back on the GameCube days, and it still had the tank controls.
And this one was a GameCube era game, right?
I think it was PS2 first, and then it came out on GameCube, but I think a lot of people considered the GameCube version the definitive edition of the game.
Mm-hmm.
And then, yeah, it's been remastered and HD remastered on pretty much every platform. I own it on PlayStation 4 and on PC. And going back and playing it, which I have done on Steam, not on PlayStation 4 yet, but on Steam, the Steam version of it, I think is just fine. I don't think it needs a remake. I don't know what the point of this is, aside from, literally all they're going to be doing is, I imagine they can't really improve on the controls, because controls are still pretty much exactly like the first two Resident Evil remakes and Resident Evil 5, and nobody really seems to have a problem with any of those over-the-shoulder controls.
Mm-hmm.
I just can't see what they're going to do to this aside from put it in the new engine and just make it look pretty.
And charge $60 for it.
And then charge $60 for it. I don't know. I feel like there's a huge missed opportunity with them not doing Dino Crisis, if I'm completely honest.
Dude, Dino Crisis was so much fun.
It was. It was just such an over-the-top game. But, it's funny. I'm sure they have some sort of marketing or research team that's really put feelers out there for Dino Crisis. Because I know that it was being rumored as a remake for a while. And I wonder if that got canceled because there just wasn't enough popularity. If there just wasn't enough hype. Yeah. From people. I feel like...
I don't think Dino Crisis carries the same kind of recognition as something like Resident Evil.
I'm positive it doesn't. I mean, first off, you had to have grown up during my time to even be familiar with the game, right? And or what it stands for. There's like a whole bunch of people that came after the PlayStation 1 era that have no fucking idea what a Dino Crisis game is.
Yeah.
So you're talking about a franchise that appeared on one console and only had 2 games. Granted, I thought they were both very good games, but I don't know what the appeal is of a Jurassic Park-style survival horror game without a Jurassic Park name attached to it.
That's true. Or maybe they're just waiting for a follow-up to Jurassic World.
Maybe.
Or Fallen Kingdom, or whatever the hell the last one was called.
Maybe. I don't know. It's been, like I said, RE4 has been ported multiple times, and I'm not really sure what is this going to accomplish aside from making it look pretty, but maybe that's all people want.
Yeah,
maybe that's all people want. I hope that they're taking all the money. I would almost say that Resident Evil 3 could be justified being as bad as it was if they're taking that money and really putting it into 8. If they make 8 something genuinely special as a result of all these remasters and remakes, then then so be it.
I guess they just take all of this remake money,
and pump it right into 8, make it something fucking incredible again.
Yeah.
Then I'll say there is no loss there. I'll remain a little bit burned, but that's okay. I'll keep it going. Next up, this one's interesting. Manga artist Tsuhiro Maruo. He teased Silent Hills. So apparently all the fucking rumors that Silent Hill or that Konami was shooting down a couple weeks ago is just bullshit. I don't know.
Maybe I read this article and I tried to dig into it a bit. I have no idea what the hell this is even about.
I can't find anything.
So there was a billboard or a sign or something that said Silent Hills. And there was a caption on his post that said, "Afternoon invitations, hope you'll join."
Yeah. And then he posted another picture of him being at Konami's headquarters.
Yeah, like I don't know what this is.
I would assume that it's this artist going in to talk about Silent Hills with Konami.
Yeah.
Which would make it apparent that Konami is, in fact, entertaining the idea of a Silent Hills continuation. Granted, it still shoots down the rumors that they were going to hand it over to Sony and let Sony have its way with it. But I don't know. The other thing is, I really don't know anything about this manga artist.
Yeah, neither do I.
And I admit that's ignorance on my part. I just don't follow manga that closely, aside from like a handful of artists and writers that you know I grew up with as a kid. This one's interesting though. It's hard to not immediately jump to conclusions and hope that this is going to mean the future of the franchise. But at the same time, I wonder if everybody just needs to remain not holding their breath and keep focused on things that are a little more concrete, because as of right now, this is still just, I mean, it's a candle in the wind at this point, I think. But we'll stay on it. If anything more definitive comes out of this, we'll let y'all know. And then finally ending with a little bit of board game news, and this one actually seems like it could be a lot of fun. Brand new board game edition of Trivial Pursuit. It's called the Horror Ultimate Edition. It's coming this fall. The 600-question horror movie edition of the Trivial Pursuit, the original version, was released back in 2018. And apparently they're doing an Ultimate Edition that's on its way later this year. The official press release says that only the most hardened horror fanatics will dare play this terrifying edition of the classic trivia game. Players will move around the board to answer questions about their favorite genre, collect wedges, and complete the full circle of six. To win 1,800 spine tingling questions.
A lot of questions.
Yeah, we'll take you on six reference heavy categories, sure to elevate your heart rate. Gore and disturbing, psychological, killer, monster, comedy, and paranormal. You'll explore the darkest corners of pop culture in this fact-based challenge, where survival skills are a must to answer 1,800 blood-curdling questions from across all horror genres. What's included in this? One custom game board, six custom movers, which should include a monster hand, a doll head, a straitjacket, a goat head, a cleaver in the brain, and a table saw. The table saw seems a little bit out of place. The rest of them sound awesome. But 300 cards with 1,800 questions. Categories, like I said, we already went over those. We got 36 wedges as well as rules.
You know what I feel like is a missed opportunity here? So every Trivial Pursuit game I've ever seen, including the one that I've got sitting on my console over there, it's always that little pie, and you get the six little wedges, and you get your wedges, and you try to win. A missed opportunity here. Instead of wedges, they should have done sides to a puzzle box.
Yeah. They could have done it like literally anything, right? They could have done like pieces of flesh or like pages of the Necronomicon or like...
Yeah.
Like anything like that.
I think that would have been really cool. But I saw this pop up online last week, I think, or earlier this week. And was initially like... instantly really excited about this.
Right. Yeah, I'm excited about it too.
And I suck at Trivial Pursuit.
I would love to give this a shot, honestly, and I'll probably look at picking it up when it's released. It's just a matter of when the fuck are we all going to be able to stop social distancing and sit down and play it. Like we said a couple weeks ago, releasing board games right now may not be the greatest thing on the face of the earth. We'll see.
Well, fortunately, this doesn't come out until the fall.
Yeah, that's true. That's true. So there's plenty of time for us to not have to social distance anymore. Although some people are saying that we're going to be social distancing until, what, like 2022 or something like
that? Mm-hmm. Yeah, I read about that.
So I don't know. We'll see how it goes, I guess. But that wraps it up for the horror headlines, Sam. We got
one last mention. San Diego Comic-Con.
Oh, right. Corona cancellations.
Part of our Corona cancellations. It is officially canceled due to the coronavirus. The official statement reads, for the first time in its 50-year history. Damn, 50 years.
Yeah, I had no idea. It's been around for a long time.
The organizers behind the annual pop culture celebration announced with deep regret that there will be no Comic-Con in 2020.
So recognizing this is the third big Right, so we have E3 canceled, which tends to be one of the biggest sources of gaming news. We yep. have Comic-Con canceled now, which is the biggest source of movie, gaming, comic book. mm-hmm. This is like pop culture news that's just been shot down. And we had GDC canceled,
yeah.
which tends to be the biggest source, the second biggest source of gaming news. That sucks. We're going to get a whole bunch of, you know, like, I'm sure companies had stuff prepared and ready to go and release to, you know, at this point in the year, they had these things ready to go, right? They had these announcements ready to go. They have trailers. They're already getting all these things set up and ready to go. We're going to get so many, like, micro announcements from different publishers, developers, studios, comic book writers, it's going to be information overload. If we thought information overload was happening when we got these events back to back to back, the way that they always arrive every year, it's going to be even harder keeping up with all the announcements not from one source.
Yeah, that's the hardest part, because now you're getting it from dozens or hundreds of different sources.
Right, right. Yeah, it's...
They did announce that individuals who purchase badges for Comic-Con 2020 will have the option to either get a refund or transfer their badges to Comic-Con 2021.
Yep.
And if you reserved a hotel room through their official hotel affiliate on Peak, they will be canceling all reservations and refunding all deposits made through them.
Good on them for that. Honestly,
I did not see anything regarding, you know, if you went through a hotel not tied to On Peak. But given the company that I work for and the industry I work in, if you happened to reserve a hotel not through Comic-Con's group, reach out to the hotel. They will most likely be more than willing to work with you, refund you, or give you a voucher to use at some other point.
Yeah, exactly. It really seems like there have been a few companies, though. Airplane companies are the ones that immediately come to mind that are the hardest to deal with in terms of travel. So hopefully getting your airplane tickets, your airfare back won't be that bad. But good luck. We'll see how it goes. It always sucks when this kind of stuff is canceled. But it looks like July 22nd to 25th of 2021, they're planning to return. So we'll see how it goes.
Yep.
Now Slang?
Yeah, we got a few things this week.
All right, let's get into it. All right, Sam, what do we got?
All right, so a couple things. We got one thing this week. We actually got some things that snuck by me in the last week or so. So we'll start with that. The Perished from the Horror Collective came out on April 7th on VOD. This one tells the story of a young Irish woman named Sarah Decker, who finds herself dealing with an unwanted pregnancy, her subsequent abortion, and the consequences of a judgmental society.
Uh-oh.
It's not at all. Can't keep their fucking opinions to themselves.
That's not at all what I thought that was going to be about. You said The Perished, and I was just like, oh my god, nuns? Are they involved? Are they involved? Is this happening? Is this another movie I need to watch?
The Perished. Not The Perished. Okay, so, this one, I've been wondering what happened in this film. Talked about it a whole bunch last year, and then it just kind of disappeared, and now I know why.
Uh-oh.
Or at least, not know why, but I know what happened to it.
Uh-oh.
We Summon the Darkness from Saban Films finally came out on VOD on April 10th, long after its originally scheduled VOD release date of December 13th from last year.
Yep.
The killing spree of murderous Satanists has already led to 18 deaths throughout America's heartland. Three best friends embark on a road trip to a heavy metal gig. Naive, they band with three seemingly fun-loving guys, and the group heads off to Alexis's secluded country home for an after-party. What should be a night of fun and youthful debauchery may instead take a dark, deadly turn, and with killers on the loose, can anyone be trusted?
The answer is probably not.
Probably not. I've wanted to watch this movie ever since I heard about it, because it just seems so ridiculous, and Johnny Knoxville's in it.
Yeah,
as a priest,
I've heard very mixed things on this so far.
I'm not expecting it to be like.
Well, it's interesting because the critical response has been very good. The audience response has been lukewarm.
Okay,
from what I've read.
And then
I don't know.
Finally,
I'm very much looking forward to that film. I'm going to watch the hell out of it. In fact, we're actually basing the entirety of next month's theme on the premise of watching this one movie. So,
that's right.
Expect that to be covered in May.
So I'm definitely looking forward to that. And finally, the new one this week, Behind You from Vertical Entertainment on April 17th on VOD. two young sisters sent to live with their estranged aunt find that all the mirrors in her house are covered or hidden.
Okay.
When one of the sisters happens upon a mirror in the basement, she unknowingly releases a malicious demon that had haunted her mother and aunt years ago.
Ooh, that's interesting. That's a, that's juicy. It's like, what was it, Oculus, right? Was that, God, who did that movie? Was that an Aha joint? Yeah, I think it was. It starred, what's her name from Doctor Who? The one, the redhead that everybody thinks is super hot.
I can't answer that question. I never watched Doctor Who.
All right, fair enough. that's it, huh?
I guess that wraps it up.
That's more than Oh, I'm sorry. That was a Flanagan joint.
Karen Gillan. Right.
That's it. She's pretty. Anyways, I guess that's more than I expected to be on the Now Select. I do expect pretty much at this point every week it's just going to be an empty list. And you just be like twiddling your thumbs for 5 minutes while we sit there in silence during the Now Slang segment.
we had some stuff last week. Yeah, we did. I think going forward we're gonna start seeing, you know, a regular stream of stuff. It's not gonna be a lot, and I don't think most of it's gonna be big releases, but we should be seeing things because I think studios are finally adjusting to the new normal.
Is your cat snoring?
Can you hear that?
Yes.
Yes, that is my cat on my desk snoring. I've been wondering for like the last 5 or 10 minutes if anybody could hear that.
I just started hearing it. Like, because it's like, not. What the fuck is that noise?
It wasn't showing up on my recording.
Okay, as long as it's not showing up on your track, I'm getting it over Skype, but that doesn't really matter. As long as it's not showing up on your recording track, and I can always edit it out later. It's just funny. I just hear this like squeaking sound. I'm like, what the fuck.
Yeah, so if anybody can hear that, I have a cat bed that I keep on my desk because one of my cats particularly just likes to be near me, and she always lays down like on my keyboard or right in front of my monitors. So I put a cat bed on my desk right next to it, and she's super fat, and she's got kind of a flat little face, so she snores when she sleeps.
It is a funny noise that she makes. Anyways, you guys, are you ready to discuss with me?
Yes.
This main event?
Yes.
All right. Let's do it.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to tonight's main event.
All right. This week's main event is Class of Nukem High. It came out in 1986. Sam, hit us with this synopsis.
Oh, man, it is a free country. We've got nuclear power, and we go wherever we want, even in the times of Corona. Ain't none of us got limp dicks because we're the youth of today. We've got giant, raging, 6-foot-long atomic boners. God bless America, and God bless the Class of Nukem High.
Directed by Richard W. Haynes, Michael Herz, and Lloyd Kaufman, who appears in the credits as Samuel Wheel. It's written by Lloyd Kaufman, Richard Haynes, Mark Rudnitsky, and Stuart Strutton. It's starring Janelle Brady as Chrissy, Jill Brenton as Warren, Robert Pritchard as Spike, James Nugent Vernon as Eddie, Pat Ryan Jr. as Mr. Paley, Brad Dunker as Gonzo, Gary Schneider as Pete, Theo Cohan as Muffy, Rick Howard as Spud, Gary Rosenblatt as Greg, Mary Taylor as Judy, Lauren Heather McMahon as Taru. This is considered one of Trauma's tentpole franchises, right? Classic Nukem High is one of their most recognizable films in their wheelhouse. Starting in 1986, the film has spawned 3 direct sequels and 2 additional volumes with a rebranded name called Return to Nukem High. Aside from the Toxic Avenger series, no other Trauma series has been more revisited than this one. With good reason, I think. The film has some of the most memorable scenes in all of Trauma history. How often do you get to see a mutated boner nightmare in cinema? Not often enough. Not often enough is the answer to that. Set in Tromaville, New Jersey, the film's runtime of 92 minutes is, it's jagged at best. There are lots of dull lulls in the comedic set pieces that make for memorable viewing. It's better than something like Tammy and the T-Rex. Maybe that's up for debate. I guarantee.
I think it depends on which one you saw first.
Yeah, I guess so. I guarantee there are plenty of people that would say it is, but for me, this movie lacks the lasting charm of some of the other schlock we've covered on this cast. It's a victim of feeding us maybe a bit too much, which is astounding considering the film's meager $2 million budget. But I guess if you look back at the point in the 80s, $2 million isn't anything to scoff at, especially for a trauma film.
Yeah, for a trauma film, that's a lot of money.
That's a shitload of money in the 80s for them. The interesting aspects of this movie, before we jump into the long-winded synopsis that I've got for us, it slices and dices bits of what was, I guess, popular in 80s culture at that mm-hmm. point in time, right? Which is why I think it does have redemption to it, redeeming qualities, I guess, is more the instance. The whole it really plays with the fact that the whole children are not okay thing was yeah. really at its prime in the 80s. You know, you had everybody kind of going. We had Dare's inception, we had Mad, we had everybody trying to be against drugs and alcohol, and you know, like, you know, as a teenager, whatever, but the Puritan culture was really starting to get its foothold in American society at this point in time. Mm-hmm. And there was a lot of rebellion. We had the punk scene, the 80s version of the punk scene really coming into full like clash only a couple years beforehand. And this is really captured to its extremes in this film. Right, because we started to see a lot of like the gauging, the piercings, the tattoos, the leather jackets, the spiked hair, all that kind of stuff. That did exist in the 80s, not quite so predominantly as much as the media would like you to believe that it did, but it's really embraced with this film in Class of Nukem High. The other thing that I kind of want to point out before we jump into it is just one of the reasons I don't like this film as much as a lot of other people do is because I really do feel like it's a pretty direct ripoff of the success that they had with the Toxic Avenger.
Yes.
I also feel like they really kind of like I don't think a lot of people would look at Troma as a brand and accuse them of selling out. Right. But I think that this film is the closest that they ever got to it. Because they took the same premise, literally the exact same premise of the first few minutes of the Toxic Avenger. Some nerd gets hit with toxic sludge that turns into, in this case, he turns into a monster, right?
It turns into Toxie.
Yeah. In Toxic Avenger, he turns into Toxie. In this one, he just kind of deteriorates and spews a whole bunch of stuff and that's kind of the end of him, right? So this is like an alternate history take on what could have happened if this kid didn't turn into Toxie, right? It would have just affected the youth of today. It's capturing a lot of the same type of comedic balances, the same type of outrageous gore scenes, the same type of humor and pacing that Toxic Avenger had, but it doesn't. None of it seems quite as successful. None of it seems quite as over the top. And it seems like this movie, a lot of this movie, especially in the beginning, is more of like, we were successful with what we did in Toxic Avenger. Let's see if we can make Lightning Strike twice, take the same premise, and just make it about the kids of today, rather than try to create our own superhero, right? And I think that's my biggest issue with it. Other than that, I think it's an okay film. Like I said, I think its pacing is a little all over the place.
I think my biggest issue with it, tied to kind of all of that and the pacing, if you're going to go the route that they went, where instead of ending up with your hero, Toxie, mm-hmm. Where you have your big bad toxic mutant monster at the end of the movie, it's the payoff isn't there. I'd rather, given some of the pacing issues that happen in this movie, I would have rather seen that earlier and throughout the whole thing.
Right, right. I will say, though this movie had less of the violence and more of a focus on comedy, I will say a lot of the energy that existed in the original Toxic Avenger is captured here. as well.
Absolutely.
As well.
I mean, it is a trauma film.
It is.
After all.
Yeah, absolutely. So, I mean, you've got the slapstick humor, which I think it really takes front and center with this. And this kind of tries to be like a hodgepodge. It's like almost like you had a chef try to make some sort of hybrid dish with this film, right? Like, so they've got a whole bunch of different flavors, and they're like, you know what? This is gonna be the first example of what the, there's a phrase for it. Why is it escaping me right now? When you like combine different styles,
fusion.
Yes, this is gonna be the first like example of fusion cooking that we can bring to the table, right? So he's taking a whole bunch of sprinkles of different essences of film. So you've got the teenage high school comedy, you've got the gory over the top exploitation stuff. You've got the teenage romance films all kind of slapped together in one bowl.
Yeah.
And you're kind of hoping that the results are going to be something that's palatable. It is. I feel like this, if you were going to eat this as a soup, some bites would be really good and other bites are going to leave you like, I wish they would have put more of something else in here.
Have you ever seen the movie Real Genius?
I have, but it has been a long goddamn time.
So Real Genius came out a year before this movie.
Right.
And watching... Real Genius is a movie that I love, but watching Class of Nukem High makes me feel like this is just Lloyd Kaufman's version of Real Genius.
You know,
you've got the big inside beach party, which is like a big setup part of the movie. You got your lasers and radiation.
Mm-hmm.
You've got your big bad guy, who in the case of this movie is the nuclear power plant administrator or whatever the fuck he is.
Right.
Whereas in Real Genius, it's a professor who steals everything but works for the government. There's a lot of parallels, and I've never really been able to shake that.
Yeah. Well, you know,
not saying that's a bad thing. I love Real Genius, and I do enjoy this movie.
Mm-hmm.
It's just a interesting thing that I've never really been able to get rid of. And
okay,
considering how closely they came out together.
Mm-hmm.
Always struck me as a little strange.
Yeah, for sure. I think there's just a lot of parallels to different films in this. But ultimately, it's what? The exploration of corruption in teenage society, right? So you've got the honor students, the kids that used to be the goody two-shoes, all of a sudden becoming these corrupted punks that are peddling drugs and trying to bring the rest of the town down with them, you know?
Yeah.
And I think ultimately that's what they're kind of going for here. So the film follows the events that unfold at Tromaville High School in New Jersey, which is conveniently located next to a nuclear power plant. An accident at the nuclear plant is covered up by the plant owner named Mr. Paley, who appears in Toxic Avenger. In fact, a lot of the cast of this film appears in the Toxic Avenger. Mm-hmm. Before this, who does not want the facility shut down by the safety commission. The accident causes a radioactive water leak, which ends up gruesomely killing a student at the school after the tainted water reaches a drinking fountain.
Which is just like really dark green Kool-Aid.
Yeah, with lots of smoke. Yeah. There's a lot of like dry ice used in this movie. the gang of the school, called the Cretans, who were originally a part of the Honor Society, torments the school, and it's implied that they have been turned into violent psychopaths by the runoff of the plant.
And so this group is all kind of what you talked about with, like, the 80s punks. So you had leather, you had studs, you had, you know, bright hair, mohawks, and piercings, and gauges. The only thing that I feel like they were different, mm-hmm. because I sure as shit never saw it, in the 80s or 90s, like, never saw any, like, footage of it in the 80s, at least, and never knew anybody in the 90s or early 2000s that did it, was all the face paint.
Yeah, yeah.
But I loved it.
Like, the costumes, you mean?
Yeah.
Dude, some of them are fucking great. Other ones, I'm just like, that's a little ridiculous even for a trauma film. Like, the guy with the plastic braces. Yeah, or like the it's not even braces. It's like full on mouth. They're just like mouth guards. Wearing 24/7. Like it makes it so impossible for him to speak the entire.
And he makes that weirdly that he makes that really weird laugh.
Yeah.
Throughout the movie.
Yeah. Yeah.
That sounds like some weird kind of chicken.
Yep. Yep. It's interesting because there's a bit of incongruity between what's going on and with this one cast of colorful characters that used to be the goody two-shoe students and the rest of the school that is not affected by the runoff of this whatsoever.
Nah, totally fine.
And it's interesting because it's not really addressed in the entirety of this film. Aside from maybe like two lines, and there's this dichotomy that exists in this film that doesn't exist in any other trauma film, right? In other trauma films, they would have ratcheted up the weirdness 100% across the board, just made every character in this school go absolutely batshit crazy. Mm-hmm. Whereas in this one, they try to keep some sort of sense of normalcy going on between these. How many people are in this gang? Six, right? Something like that.
Six or seven.
Yeah. Between this one gang of students that is trying to peddle this toxic weed and then
beating up pretty much everybody in public view.
Yes.
Of everybody that works
there. Yes. And then the rest of the school, which, like I said, it's the staff, aside from one staff member who got her skin melted off or something like that.
Yep.
Is all totally normal. The parents are all totally normal. The kids are all totally normal. The rest of the fucking town's all totally normal. If this water exists in the runoff, or this runoff exists in the water, something would have affected more than just these six kids.
This is what happens, though, when you hang out under bridges.
Yes, I guess so.
I've been to bridge shows. I know what it's about.
Yeah. It's weird, though, because, I guess the rules of the film aren't really explained like they are in other trauma films. At least they're not explained that well. So it is what it is. But you're getting this handful of students that are going to be, I guess the antagonist aside from the nuclear power plant owner throughout the rest of the film. That's not to say that this film isn't weird, because the next sentence that I'm going to read is definitely going to crack a laugh if you haven't seen this movie before. At his indoor bikini beach party that night, Eddie pressures his friend Warren and Warren's girlfriend Chrissy into smoking a radioactive joint, but it's accidentally ruined by the dancers before anybody else can try it. The mutated drug shows itself to have potent aphrodisiac effects, leading Warren and Chrissy to having sex in Eddie's loft.
So the Cretans got this weed from a plant growing right by a fence at the nuclear power plant. Yes,
this is the version this is Troma's version of the three-eyed fish in The Simpsons.
Yes. they sold it to Eddie for they sold Eddie one joint for $10.
Yep.
And call it Atomic High.
Mm-hmm.
And they said that it will get the girls so high that they'll want to do anything.
Yeah, so that's the whole premise of this, right? Is that this is basically like being peddled as a roofie.
Yes. It is a smokable roofie.
It is a smokable roofie that gets you high on top of everything else.
And they kind of force it on Chrissy, too.
Yeah, yeah.
It just like lands in her mouth. They're like, do it!
Yeah. But she does it.
She does it.
However, that same night... So at this point, right, it's almost like one of the films that we were kind of discussing watching for this month was going to be Reefer Madness. And there was just some internal discussion between all of us as to whether or not that was a relevant film for us to cover. Regardless of whether or not you feel like it's a relevant film, the premise of that movie is that people smoke weed and go crazy. This is Troma's homage so far to Reefer Madness. People are smoking weed and going crazy.
Yeah, so Chrissy and Warren, they bail on the party and go upstairs in the same building, apparently.
Yes, yes. Even after being like, oh, we can't have sex here, they just go to have sex anyways.
Yeah, because Chrissy got atomically high.
Yeah.
And she wants Warren's joint.
Yes, yes. And so she goes from being a part of the bikini party to touching herself in her blue bikini on the bed, in a way that is just so over the top. But like I said, they have these disturbing nightmares about hideously mutating. Though it seems like these mutations are gone by the next morning. So they can't.
Yeah, we have a 6-foot atomic boner.
Yes, yes. And what is probably the film's most iconic scene.
And he seems like really excited when he looks down and sees his like monstrous heart on.
Yeah.
He's super proud of himself.
Oh, 100%. He's like, yeah.
Whereas Chrissy gets like
impregnated like
and 9 months pregnant in like 20 seconds.
Yeah.
And has noticeably the opposite reaction.
Yes, she is not happy. Well, she's got this like tentacle thing coming out of her belly button, and something's like in her throat, and this is like a drug feel, like an LSD fueled look at what happens in Rosemary's Baby, just involving toxic sludge instead of Satan. So, yeah, I don't know. It's. They're bizarre scenes, but this is actually probably one of the biggest points. I see this, the boner scene, linked on Facebook horror groups all the fucking time. The fucking time. So people really do like this scene, like this moment, this nightmare hallucination that takes place. Like I said, these effects are gone by morning, and sometime later, Chrissy discovers that she is, in fact, pregnant. Right, so we get this scene. Her mother, she's at the doctor. The doctor's like, "Oh, she just had a miscarriage." Her mother. This is the one brief moment that we get to
miscarriage.
See, yeah, the one brief moment that we get to see the parents in all of this. And of course, she's just like, "Oh, you know, my daughter couldn't have a miscarriage. You must be mistaken." Blah 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 blah. And they're like, "No, she was 9 months pregnant. All signs are pointing to the fact that she was 9 months pregnant, and she lost the baby." And her mother throws everything up in the air and faints and.
And there's like slapstick shit going on in the background. Yeah. Like, there's a doctor that walks by in the background who like trips and falls into a wall face first.
Yeah, and so this is kind of like the example of like the uneven tone that like I think happens throughout the movie. Like, they do a lot of these just like slapstick bits that seem like they're just padding almost for the runtime.
Yeah.
That I think are kind of unnecessary, and they happen in a lot of trauma films. To be completely honest. But this one for me, I don't know. It just seems, I think because of the fact that a lot of the town, a lot of the outside town is so normal that when these crazy things happen in the background with the normal characters, it feels out of place compared to when you see like the gang get into some wacky antics. It's like, okay, it's a little bit more believable because of the fact that they're already so fucking out of control and crazy and just like, you know, feel like they should be a part of the Warriors and not the rest of the town, even though it's Tromaville, USA, right? Like,
yeah.
And like I said, this is kind of an example of like that uneven tone that I think this film exudes from time to time. So after discovering she's pregnant, Chrissy spits this little monster out from her throat. Her throat gets all bulbous and expands, and this little tadpole, larger than a tadpole, but tadpole-shaped, plops in the toilet, right? Sometime later, Chrissy... she spits the monster into the toilet. Then the creature travels through the water pipes and lands in a barrel filled with radioactive waste, mutating into an even bigger creature.
Very conveniently placed barrel.
Yes, yes. So all this is happening in the background, and kind of we get glimpses of it throughout the film's runtime, but this is just something that like turns into a background story up until the very end of the film.
Yeah.
The nuclear power plant orders a lockdown of the school and begins an investigation into the student who died at the film's beginning. Which you'd think would have happened.
We're about 45 minutes into the movie at this point.
Yeah, and
right?
Like the course of multiple days. And finally, an investigation's being launched, which kind of just paints the fact that this nuclear power plant really doesn't give a shit about anything it's doing.
Well, I think it also shows that the boss at the plant, Mr. Paley, he runs a tight ship. He tells people what to do, and they don't question him. They absolutely listen to him.
Yeah, because he's telling everybody to shut their mouths and blah, 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 and keep silent, and...
Everybody they fucking do, is. And there's a part I think when he tells the workers who are wearing 3M helmets, so apparently they work for 3M, to go and make up some story to get the east wing of the school shut down.
Yeah.
Which I think happens after this. It's very much like, yes, sir, whatever you say, sir. Because I think everyone's afraid that he's going to eat them.
Yeah, he does have the stature of somebody who would have no qualms with with eating you in any way, shape, or form. Every time, yeah. Every time I watch this, any movie that he's a part of, I think that he would have been a great possible casting choice for the cardinal in The Preacher, the big fat one that's protecting the lineage of Jesus.
Wow, that is a really good
one. Yeah, like, he would be perfect for that role. Anyways, one of the nuclear workers tries to investigate the basement. Though his equipment shows signs of a spill, he can't find any evidence outside of a foul odor. After hearing a sound for the second time he previously dismissed, he investigates. After observing a barrel, the monster's arm reaches out, claws his face, and disfigures him. As the worker screams out in pain, the monster pulls him into the barrel and eats him, only to cough up his left hand ID and badge, making the worker the monster's very first kill. This scene is pretty ridiculous.
If by ridiculous you mean great.
Yeah, so the hand just pops out, slashes the guy's face. The way that the film edits this scene, it goes from like a full body shot to just his face to just all of a sudden the gash is appearing. It's actually pretty well done and makes the prosthetic effects look relatively believable, which I think, and I don't mean this as a shot to Troma because I do really like Troma films, but especially dismemberings and cuts and explosions of gore that happen in Troma films, sometimes they have issues with editing, and that's more due, obviously, to the low budget and all that kind of stuff. That makes them look very fake, and I think that's actually become kind of one of their calling cards as they've gone up, or as they've created more films, is I don't think they're ever intending any of this stuff to look remotely realistic.
I mean,
one's pretty well done.
It's B-movies.
Yeah, for sure.
It's B-movies made by people who love B-movies.
Yeah, but this one, I you know me, I like to pause and kind of rewind and see if I can spot certain things about the way that editing happens, or if I can see the hose that's sticking out or anything like that.
Yeah.
But this one's done pretty well. And it's done pretty comically. I actually really enjoyed the whole take. And this is kind of another example of like the dichotomy in pacing and tone, right? So you have these slapstick moments where the comedy is forced into the background of the normalcy of everything that's going on in the film. And then you've got the inherent comedy that comes with the gore that Troma's known for. And this is where they're at home. And this is one of those scenes that's like, it's graphic, it's violent, but it's over the top and it's hilarious all at the same time. Like the whole premise of this whole scene is just so fucking wacky that I think if they would have just stuck with this throughout the entirety of the film, it would have, at least in my eyes, been a much better movie. Meanwhile, Warren, tired of the Cretans' constant harassment, ends up going to a radiation-fueled rampage, killing two of them with no memory of the event. Once he comes to his sentences. So we're starting to get into more of the characters kind of being affected by the nuclear fallout of what's going on with this power plant. The Cretans are expelled from the school and cut off from their customer base, but they assault the principal and force him to use the school's radiation alarm to cause an evacuation, letting the Cretans bar up the building and occupy it. They proceed to do tons of vandalism to it, spray painting the walls.
Spray paint all the walls. They chuck desks and chairs and shit off the roof.
Yep.
They have one revolver that never needs to be reloaded that they fire into the ceiling 37 times.
That's true.
They drive motorcycles up and down the halls. Smash pretty much everything you can think
just
of.
One of the characters, God, what's her name? Muffy, Theo Cohen's character, just rubs her butt in everybody's face. Just it's just We were hounding on that Destiny Child. By the way, I think both of us got lectured on the history of Destiny's Child by our significant
others. So I asked Mary about it like the day after we recorded it, and we had to run out to the grocery store, and we spent a good 15 minutes, and by we, I mean I spent a good 15 minutes having the entire history of Destiny's Child explained to me, along with who went to jail, what Beyoncé's parents were responsible for, how the women in Destiny's Child came and went, and who's doing what now, which apparently includes not one, but two people having apparently successful gospel careers.
Yes, Kelly also informed me that not quite, and I don't think she went into quite as much detail, but, that people do have careers after Destiny's Child. and that movie did not ruin anybody's career, so...
Which look. Also, though, now that you mention it, though, that is an interesting thing to note. Because I know we talked about it last week with Kelly Rowland's use of the word faggot.
Yeah.
And
how liberally it's used in this. Yeah. She uses it four times in the course of this film.
Yeah.
And she's not the only one. There's two other characters that use it. I think I counted a total of six times throughout the entirety of the film.
So yeah, it is very liberally used in this, which...
But it is in a lot of trauma films, too. It's same thing in The Toxic Avenger.
Yeah.
I mean, I think it's, like I said, I think it's just a product of the time, especially when you go back and watch. Because, like, think about the era that it was filmed. Tammy and the T-Rex had a couple uses of it. I think it's just like a B-movie go-to. Like, if you are a reprehensible character, you're going to just want to call people faggot.
It's also, though, it's strange, though, because, you know, Freddy vs. Jason, while we know that it's not by any means a serious film, feels a lot more serious than this one does.
Yes.
And I think the one usage of that word in that movie, like, is so much more, like, grating and off-putting than it is in this.
I will say, it doesn't, like...
It doesn't seem as malicious in this as it did in Freddy vs. Jason.
Yeah.
Which is not to say that it's not a malicious word, because it absolutely is. And maybe part of it is just because it's used so much more in this movie that, like, the first time you hear it, it's like, oh... And then by the sixth time, you're like, eh.
Yeah, you become a little desensitized to it, maybe.
Yeah.
I don't know. It's an interesting thing, and it was actually going to be, you know, my next point of conversation up until you brought it up. It was just like, yeah, it kind of had a similar effect the first time you hear it, and then Muffy says it, like, the third time, and then the fourth time, and then you hear, like, the other interesting thing is, like, the good characters use this in response to the bad characters. Is like describing them a couple of times, and so it's not just like it's a reprehensible thing, you know. Like it's like all sides are just using it willy nilly, and it seems like it's like kind of reduced down to just an insult. But it's always used in a sexual context with this, which is interesting thing to note, I guess. I think it's just a product of when the time is or when the film is filmed was made. Yeah. So I don't know, take it as you will, but, the Cretans, they capture Chrissy as bait for Warren, the leader of the gang, and, they hold her hostage in the basement and plan to kill her in front of Warren, only to be interrupted by a now adult monster. It's interesting because we never see the monster from head to toe, right? We only ever see the bits of him. And apparently the costume for this monster was never completed.
It doesn't surprise me.
It was just,
cause what you do see is pretty like thorough.
Yeah. It definitely zooms in on the bits that you see. But apparently the goal was to have this monster be shot from head to toe, and they just never finished the costume. So as a result, they only ever filmed like the bits and pieces of it. But honestly, like I said, you know, like it turns out to be the case in most horror films, I don't think it's a bad thing that they don't show the entirety of the monster.
I don't think so. You know, if the movie was focused on him, like he was this movie's version of Toxie.
Yeah.
Then yes, you need to show the whole thing.
Right.
But because he's relegated to like a almost like a side story that's just there to set up the ending. I don't think you need to show the whole thing. I also imagine that costume would be incredibly heavy because it looked like they just had giant pieces of rebar.
Yeah.
Just jutting out of his head.
Yeah. I'd agree. Warren goes into the school to save Chrissy. And he discovers that the adult monster who kills every one of the Cretans is there, lying in wait for him. Warren finally zaps the beast with a laser from the physics laboratory, and he and Chrissy flee from the school right after the monster explodes, along with the school, also killing the abominable Mr. Paley inside. The students celebrate victory as over the loudspeakers, the school announces that it will be shut down for remodeling.
No more bio tests.
While reconstruction is taking place, one of the monster babies appears squirming through the remains of the destroyed school. The screen freeze frames on the creature as the screen inverts shortly before fading out and the credits roll. Wrapping up, like I said, one of the more lucrative franchises that Troma's ever tapped into. Sam, you got some extra stuff for us.
Yeah, so the soundtrack to this movie is like so incredibly 80s that it actually kind of hurts.
It really is.
But it works really well. The soundtrack to the film was actually unreleased until not too long ago, 2014, when Troma licensed its release to the Ship to Shore Phonoco label, which in my research, I have not been able to find them still existing. The That's album was released in physical form exclusively on LP Records as a limited pressing of 1,300 copies. 700 were black, 300 were green colored as a version known as Atomic High, which I think is awesome. And the final 300 were in a green-blue color known as Dewey's Meltdown. Inside the sleeve, there are liner notes from director Lloyd Kaufman and theme song composer Ethan Hurt, along with never-before-seen production stills and behind-the-scenes production photos from the movie, which I think is awesome.
Damn, that thing's worth $60 now.
Each LP also included an MP3 download code for the full album, including exclusive track-by-track commentary by Troma president and Class of Nukem High director Lloyd Kaufman.
Yo, the album artwork for that is fucking great.
Dude, it's so awesome. I did find one copy available on Amazon this morning for $93.
Yeah.
Although it doesn't say which version it is. I have been able to find photos of the Atomic High version, the green one, which looks really cool, because it's kind of got like a marbly, it's a, you know, green plate, but it's got kind of like a washed out marble look to it. I have not been able to find any photos of the Dewey's Meltdown version, so I don't know.
It looks like a splatter. It's
blue and green. That's my guess was splatter.
Yeah. Discogs has a picture of it.
Okay. My guess is the one that's available on Amazon, which only shows photos of the sleeve itself. If it's $93, given that that's probably one of the 700 black ones.
Yeah, I doubt that it's going to be one of the 300 limited ones.
But I think it's I think it's super cool that it comes with all of that additional stuff. Because usually things like that are, you know, limited to box sets and VODs and things like, or Blu-rays.
Right.
And like special features. I think it's awesome that they included that with this LP. Lloyd Kaufman, though, you know, everybody knows Troma for Lloyd Kaufman.
Right.
There's a really great piece on Troma and Lloyd Kaufman and kind of the history of Troma and its, you know, roots and kind of what it grew out into that's available on The Ringer. We'll link the article in the description. But this one particular nugget shows how far reaching Lloyd Kaufman's wild, possibly irradiated imagination is.
Okay.
Lloyd Kaufman has a complicated relationship with the mainstream. He never misses a chance to criticize its elitism, money grubbing, or narrow-minded perception of what a movie should be. He denounces its constant censorship and rejection of art. All of his books are about democratizing filmmaking, sharing secrets with the masses about lens tricks, special effects, marketing, and selling your own damn movies, which is actually a sub-channel on their YouTube page, Troma Films, as the series is called. A large part of his art is available for free on Troma Now, the company's streaming service, and on YouTube. With the company streaming service, Troma Now is available for 1 month for free, and then I think it's $5 a month after that. There's also a feeling he would like to be seen by the mainstream and to be recognized for his advancement of the boundaries of film. And some people do cite their influence. Quentin Tarantino specifically, his current editor Fred Raskin once interned at Troma, and Tarantino himself has cited his admiration of Troma. Trey Parker and Matt Stone, those who created our beloved South Park, owe their breakout to Troma. No matter how fringe Troma is, it's undeniably prolific and has shaped a generation of film nerds who have endured the boot camp of its production. Back in the early days of Troma, Kaufman used to take his films to Cannes and other film festivals, but pulled back when they became corporatized. Quote, when they made Cannibal the Musical, Trey Parker and Matt Stone were obsessed with getting into Sundance, but they didn't even get a fuck you letter, says Kaufman to the duo's first film, which Troma then distributed. They decided that they didn't not get invited, so they rented a place and screened the movie. Parker and Stone basically crashed Sundance with Cannibal, and today we have South Park and the Book of Mormon. Additionally, James Gunn, yes, the very same James Gunn who got fired from Disney, once worked as Kaufman's assistant and as an in-house writer, director, editor, and producer at the company. In an interview with IndieWire, he did say, I got to learn every single step of making a movie from beginning to end while I was at Troma. It was a very beneficial experience for me. He remains a close friend of Kaufman's to this day and even casts him to play bit parts in feature movies, including Slither and Guardians of the Galaxy. Quote, I love Lloyd. He's like an uncle to me. So Lloyd Kaufman and Troma Films, you know, think what you may of Troma Films. You know, if you're a horror fan, odds are you like them.
Yeah,
if you're
not a horror fan, I don't think anybody really thinks negatively of them unless you're Roger Ebert. But
yeah, if you're not a horror fan, you might you probably don't know who Troma is. But there, Lloyd Kaufman is adamant about the same things that we talk about: is getting to know more than the person that writes the movie, or more than the person that directs the movie, or more than the actors. He's very much supportive of knowing who's doing the special effects, knowing how to do the special effects, how they're made.
Right.
You know who wrote the music, who did the soundtrack. He supports every single aspect of filmmaking, and dozens, if not hundreds, of mainstream creators have either worked their way up through Troma or have direct ties one way or another through people that they work with. And I think that's just, it's an incredible thing. I think this is the first Troma film we've had a chance to cover. It's really, I don't think we've done anything else by then. Okay. We might have. This actually might be the second one. But I think it's a really important thing to really just acknowledge Lloyd Kaufman and kind of his legacy and impact on even the mainstream cinema that he kind of despises so much for, you know, how marketing heavy it is.
It is, yeah. Well, I mean, it's interesting to me, like, his legacy. Like you said, he's very adamant against selling out, right? But at the same time, he did a Toxic Avenger children's series.
Yeah.
And he's talking about doing big budget PG-13 remakes of the Toxic Avenger and stuff. And I get it. Right. You've been in the nitty gritty for as long as you have, like, it is what it is. And I'm not giving the man any slights. I really do admire him. I think he's one of the last bastions of true independent cinema. And I understand that eventually you've got to make your money, right? Like, you got it, right? Like, you can't keep going forever. So I'm not criticizing him. I'm just saying, you know, like, there's always been two sides to every coin, him included. And while I agree that he has stuck to his guns the longest, you know, nobody, unless you're fucking like G.G. Allen and you burn the candle at both ends, and you're really just like, fuck you, then you make more enemies than you have friends. You know, nobody stands for that as long as possible. But Kaufman is one of the rare examples of cinema greats that I think anybody, even if you're not a horror fan, even if you're just a cinephile, you know what Troma is and what it stands for. Mm-hmm. Even if you're not a fan of the movies or you think they're too over the top or too gory or whatever, you know, like, friends of mine that are not at all horror fans that, period, have at least seen Toxic Avenger.
Yeah.
That's just the bottom line. Or they at least know what it is and what it's about and what it stands for. And I don't think that there's too many other, especially independent companies that make these kinds of films that can get that kind of recognition.
Mm-hmm.
And it just doesn't happen very often. So it's awesome. I'm glad we have somebody like Lloyd Kaufman out there who tweets at us occasionally every once in a while.
Yeah.
The fact that guy's so boots on the ground still is astounding to me. I would have given up on that a long time ago. So yeah, it's a great piece about his legacy. We have any final points?
No, I don't, actually. Just get a chance to watch his movies if you haven't had a chance.
Yeah,
to.
I mean,
if the only one you've seen is Toxic Avenger, take a branch out and watch some other stuff.
They're all goofy. They're all along the same lines. You're not going to get
check out,
too much.
Go check out the YouTube page for Troma.
Yeah, a lot of them are on there.
They put a lot of stuff on there, including full feature movies. I think the quote from Lloyd Kaufman was, if they're going to get bootlegged, I might as well do the bootleg.
Yeah, right. Control the source. I think a lot of people are starting to realize these days, right? Like, if this stuff is ultimately going to get pirated, then control the piracy.
Yeah.
Offer people an avenue to get it cheap, and you will see a decline in piracy. Look at what happened when Netflix first came out, or when Amazon first started doing the Prime Video and stuff like that. There was a steep decline in piracy, and then all of a sudden everybody started doing it themselves, just wanting $9 for everything. All of a sudden piracy started shooting back up.
Yep. But again, like, there's really cool stuff on the YouTube channel, on Troma Now, like the Film Your Damn Movie or the behind the scenes stuff. Where, you know, maybe you don't want to make a movie. Maybe you just want to see how stuff is made. Maybe you want to see how some special effects are done without having to buy a Blu-ray. It's all available. He puts it all out there. It's some awesome stuff.
Yeah, absolutely. So what are we rating this out of?
6 foot atomic boners.
Sick, done. How many 6 foot atomic boners are we giving this one?
I'm going to give this one a 2.25.
Okay. I'm 2.75, so that puts it at 2.5 even. I didn't even need to pull out the calculator for that
one. No, we got this one.
We got that one on lock. 2.5. It sounds reasonable. Honestly, don't let that score deter you if you haven't seen this movie. It's still worth a watch. I know I've been kind of bashing on it, but mainly just because of the tonal changes here and there. I still think that there are plenty of bits of this film that are totally worth a sit down and look, anybody to sit down and kind of look at and enjoy. You will get a laugh out of this. You will get your share of gross out humor from this. So if that's up your alley and you haven't seen this one, go check it out. I strongly recommend it from that perspective. For the housekeeping, you can follow us on all the social media at Terror and Podnito. You can follow me, Palmer, at Sturmsworth. Finish it up the garden stuff, so that's pretty much all I'm posting on there. Sam?
I'm Sam at Sam Heaves. I haven't actually been too active on Twitter lately, just because I've been so busy reading about Trapped getting dragged.
Oh, yeah, that's been hilarious, hasn't it?
Yeah, that's been a lot of fun, especially when he got into it with Ice-T.
Yeah.
See, I've been lurking on Trapped's page more than I've actually been paying attention to anything else on Twitter. But yeah, I'm going to be doing some garden stuff myself, actually.
Sweet, sweet. Alex is at A Looters. She's been pretty quiet, given everything that's going on in her life, though, too. So you probably won't see a whole lot from her. Otherwise, this episode will be available later today. Next week, we are doing... What did we decide on?
This is the end.
Yes. All right. Next week we're doing This is the End. That seems like a good nightcap for stoner horror. It's not exactly a horror movie, but it's definitely gruesome and has lots of weed smoking. So it falls in the category. So that'll wrap things up in May. We're going to be tackling something very fun also. So keep your ears pressed to the ground. It's coming. It's coming. We got big things in the work. We're also going to be chatting about a couple other movies that I've had on my backlog, including some fan submitted stuff that I'm really excited to cover. So next week will definitely be more of a long form episode. Actually, you know what? I might say we should throw this, and we've got a movie called The Siren that we're going to be taking a look at that I have on physical release that I'm just going to have to socially distance pass to you guys as best I can. And we might actually turn that into a Grindhouse double feature before we jump into the main theme.
Sorry about the noise in the background, folks. I'm not entirely sure what that is.
I figure it's probably your cats. And then we've got another one that was just submitted to us a few, I guess at the beginning of the week, that I haven't had a chance to get a look at yet, but we'll be talking about it. We might do a Grindhouse Dog feature on this too. Anyways, thanks for tuning in as per usual, everybody. We hope you've enjoyed this week's episode. Everybody stay safe, keep going, keep the social distancing happening. I see protests and stuff happening right now. Don't be an idiot, come on.
And if you are in one of the states that's reopening early, like Texas and Florida, and you want to go outside, that's cool. Just be smart.
Yeah,
be safe.
Yeah.
Don't like go lick people. Don't do stuff.
Actually, apparently, at least here in Virginia now, that's a class 4 felony.
Yeah.
So, you know, I guess if you really want to spend some jail time, then go for it. But yeah. Just be smart. Use your head. Otherwise, we'll see y'all next week. Take care, everybody. And as always, keep it creepy.